Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and I have with me Dawn.
Hello.
And it's a pleasure to welcome to VI Talk Mike Oliver. Hi Mike.
Hi there.
So you've come to us today to talk about keratoconus, or KC, you've told me we're allowed to call it, which is a lot easier. So
it's way simpler. Yeah,
it is. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself first? You're visually impaired yourself?
Yeah, I have keratoconus. Everyone who's involved in managing and running our group has keratoconus in to one degree or another in one or both eyes. And I'm a chartered legal executive. I've never found, fortunately for me, that my eye problem, if you call it that, interferes with work, save that it brings obvious restrictions in terms of never driving, having to be at the front of things, generally feeling rather silly when you can't read things and stuff like that. But I've sort of got through all of that. But I also, some 25, 30 odd years ago, became involved with this group, which then was in its infancy. So it was just a few people meeting, organised by a lady called Anne Klepacz, K-L-E-P-A-C-Z, who still is the linchpin of the organisation. But then after a couple of years, she and I got together, formed a charity. And over those years, up until now, we understand the second largest self-help group in the world for KC. We run conferences. And we have no employees or anything, no office. It's all run from basically people's back bedrooms or spare rooms. But we have regular meetings in London, the West Midlands, some in Brighton, some further north, people all over the UK. And we're very lucky in that we have often been described by the optical professionals with whom we deal as a generally mouthy bunch who won't shut up. So...
good way to be.
we try to make a lot of noise. So we after a few years bashing our heads against brick walls, we generally got ourselves half-heartedly and now pretty much wholeheartedly accepted by some of the consultants at major hospitals and various optometrists, some of whom have become lifelong friends of the group and help us out a great deal. We've now got to the point, something we never expected, where we're actually, over the last 2 or 3 years, co-funding quite a lot of research through Fight for Sight and other organisations, which is something we never expected we would have the funds to do. So that's pretty much it, really. That's where we are at the moment.
Before we go on to talk about what KC is, do you want to tell us sort of the name of the group and how people can contact you to get support or to get involved?
Yeah, I mean, the name of the group is, it's a longer title, it's the Keratoconus Self-Help and Support Association, but we just call it the Keratoconus Group, and that's how it's generally known. And that is more often than not shortened by most people to KC Group. In terms of contacting us, you can do it in one of two ways. One would be to go to our website, and because I haven't got the details in front of me, I now can't remember the exact address, but if anybody searches Keratoconus Group, we should come up top every time and generally do. So you'll find us fairly easily. And also by email to the lady I mentioned, if it's okay with you, I'll give her email address, which is where everything goes.
That's fine.
So it's Anne, A-N-N-E, dot K-L-E-P-A-C-Z, that's Klepacz, at AOL.com. And she responds to everything pretty quickly. She's retired, as most of the trustees are. I'm not, but most are. And she will respond to anybody who needs some help. There's also, if they find our website, which again you can find simply by searching it, it will come out either first or second under Keratoconus, or if you put in Keratoconus Group. There's a forum and there's loads of information, booklets for students, employees, education generally, children, all sorts of other things there. And also a question and answer booklet written and updated by a senior optometrist at Moorfields on a regular basis, which, and there's other things available. So there's a lot of bits and pieces there that might help, as well as details of any forthcoming, of which of course there aren't any at the moment, meetings.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit what KC is, please, if that's possible?
Yeah, of course I can. I'll put it in layman's language because I don't understand anything else. But it's essentially conical, hence keratoconus, or bulging cornea, which means that the cornea, classically, they used to think of it as pear-shaped, but it's now been established it can be any sort of variation of the shape of the cornea. But that distortion allows distortion of light because it floods in everywhere instead of going to the point it should do. And so people get varying degrees of complete blurs, seas of lights, shadows, all sorts of things all blurred up together. It's very hard to describe, although one reasonable way of describing it is to go through the unpleasant experience of sticking your head in a bowl of water with your eyes underneath the surface, and that's roughly what it looks like. It's about the best idea you'll get. So that's essentially what it is. And it comes on usually, if it's going to come on, it's there all the time. But if it develops and the cornea starts to do what it shouldn't do, it will usually come teens or 20s, but can actually happen at any time. People can suddenly realize that things have gone horribly wrong and they can't see anything. Best example I can give of that is that I was 11, seeing, as everybody thought, perfectly normally. And then one day a teacher who saw me every day said, "Why are you holding the book at the end of your nose?" And from one day to the next, both eyes had gone rather strange. And it all sort of worked from there. So it's a very unpredictable condition, which until recently wasn't very well understood. It's still not genetically understood at all, really. Well, there's lots of research. As I say, manifests itself in usually in younger people, but can come on later. It can be managed in a number of ways. If it's very mild, it can be managed with spectacles, but that's pretty unusual. Although we are about to fund a project by a technician who believes he can develop some spectacle lens, which may assist to a greater extent. So that may be interesting. Otherwise, it's managed by various types of specialist contact lens, be they soft contact lens, hydrogels, the sort of lens I wear, which are the very large scleral lens that cover the whole eye, all sorts of varieties of those, all sorts of varieties of corneal and other RGP, rigid gas permeable lens, and all sorts of other variations that the experts are always developing. And about 15 to 20% of people end up needing some form of surgery. Those forms would usually be, most common is corneal graft, or now called corneal transplant, either whole or partial. And in about 90 to 95% of cases, that's successful, but may still mean you need contact lens afterwards. And the grafts generally only last about 20 years. Or there are other lesser forms of surgery, which I don't really fully understand. But some of them involve the insertion of bits of plastic, Ferrara rings and other things, and various other minor treatments, which to a greater or lesser extent may or may not help. Some of them aren't really proven. Some are. The most common improvement, the biggest improvement in recent years, is something called Kerolink, which again, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to say I understand the process, but it is generally most effective if you're caught in the early stages, so more often than not a teenager. If that process is undergone, it's invasive but very minor. It's not really an operation, although technically I suppose it is an operation, but it's done in a few minutes, and generally just in and out in a clinic. And it involves, I think, an incision or scrape, the insertion of riboflavin, and that has been found to halt the degree of distortion of the cornea and sometimes stop it completely. There's currently a test in children and young people, a clinical trial, which may produce good results and is currently nearing its end stages, in which we're also involved. It looks as if that will help a lot of young people to avoid the stages of really unpleasant contact lens or surgery. Sorry, I've rambled on a bit.
No, that's really interesting. That is very interesting. So it hopefully, you know, it will become quite treatable for young people, which is brilliant news, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, I was lucky in that, diagnosed at 11, and I went through secondary school with them trying to fit the right contact lens and get me to see anything. And I was just dead lucky that I had a very understanding headmaster who just helped me manage everything and gave me extra time for everything long before any disability legislation. But many people, even now, as you will know yourself, just don't get that sort of assistance. And so it can be very difficult, particularly for students who now have to sit and look at screens all day, which become completely unmanageable if they've had sight and then suddenly have got the weirdest sight imaginable, but nobody really knows what to do with it.
Yeah.
Is it a genetic eye condition, is it, or is it
Well, that, as I said earlier on, it was long thought that there was a genetic element to it, and there have been various studies. And I, my own view, and I'm speaking to the specialists and the ophthalmologists and so on at different times, is that they don't really know any more now than they did, you know, when I was diagnosed 50 years ago. They, you know, but there is undoubtedly a genetic element to it, but nobody knows quite what that genetic element is. But it appears from research it may be a genetic element that's common to a lot of atopic conditions, things like sort of hay fever to asthma to eczema and so forth, sort of allergic type conditions. And it's also been noted, but nobody's quite been able to draw a connection, that a lot of people, including me, who have keratoconus, when it begins to develop and ongoing, rub their eyes way too much. So you know, is there an itching element there or something unpleasant going on that is sort of similar to those sort of allergic conditions? There's loads of research going on around all of that, but frankly, I'm not sure that we're going to get very far, because up to date, it hasn't really produced anything that gives you a clear idea.
Yeah. So when we're not in lockdown, you said you have meetings. So yes. How often do they happen, and what sort of happens at the meetings? Are they just sort of for support, or are they, do you have speakers and things?
We generally have speakers. We try to have either two or three meetings a year in central London. Firstly, central London, only because selfishly, most of us who organise it, most of the trustees are based in or around London, and therefore that's easiest. But also because, again, the majority of us, though not by no means all, are treated at Moorfields, and Moorfields have been very good over the years and still do let us have meeting facilities free, or let us organise really whatever we want, provided we tell them in advance. So that's why we use it. But those meetings would usually have a speaker, who would usually be a medical or optical professional, or people with the condition, or others who have a valid input in terms of the issues that affect us. We generally get around 30 people at those meetings, although with the advent of the internet and everything being online, that's dipped up and down over the last 4 or 5 years. As I say, those meetings are two or three a year, but every 2 years we have a national conference. And we were really pleased this year, probably like a few other site organisations, to have our annual conference on the 6th of June 2020. In other words, 6-6 for the vision, 2020 for 2020 vision. We thought, this is great, wonderful day. And we got brilliant speakers, best we could imagine lined up. And then, of course, it didn't happen. So,
no. Oh, that's a shame.
So next year, hopefully, we'll be doing that. But that's every 2 years. In addition to that, we've got our quarterly newsletter, which is usually about 6 to 8 pages long. We have the online forum on which regular announcements are made, and whenever publications are going out, we tell people, try and keep in touch with people. We also send out email announcements to a fairly limited, because not everybody's given us their email addresses yet, number of people. But over and above London, we also have, we've always had a history of meetings in or around Birmingham and the West Midlands. Over the last 2 years, one of our trustees retired. He's moved to Shropshire from the southwest, but he's absolutely brilliant in devoting almost all his time to our group. So he's now developed a regular program of meetings, sort of 3 or 4 times a year in central Birmingham. I'm absolutely central. It's right above New Street Station. Also meetings in other towns around the Midlands and Northwest, including Liverpool. And we're currently working on trying to get some meetings going in Bristol and Brighton. We did have meetings in Scotland, but the person organising them there unfortunately became ill, and we haven't found anyone who's prepared to take the role on yet. So, but they all take roughly the same format, and we'll try and organise either speakers or other people with keratoconus or people from other eye-related organisations or charities. You can say something of interest, and then we have the most important part of any meeting, which is people actually talking to each other and asking questions, which we think, I mean, that's what we're for. We're a self-help group. We want people to talk to each other and to us, and that's what we try and devote most of any meeting to. So that's really how we do it.
Absolutely. Peer support is amazing, isn't it?
It's very important. Yeah, it's great. And we've tried to be involved with other organisations like Visionary and various other things, National Voices, a few other organisations we try and get involved in, just to sort of keep ourselves abreast of what's happening, really.
Yeah, So I'm guessing that sign up to the newsletter, that's done through the website or through emailing, Anne, is it?
It's available on the website, and it is emailed out, but we also post it out because the vast majority of people who get involved seem to prefer that. So that's what we do.
Right. Okay.
So although we'd like to drop posting it out because it costs money, on the other hand, it seems to be money well spent because people want it. So don't really mind, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say with funding, we had very little. We sort of scraped ourselves by for quite a long time until about 5 years ago when one of our members works for a Lloyd's broker, and they adopted us as their charity. And since then, we've had really useful annual funding from them, but also other insurance organisations and awards that they've introduced us to, which have enabled us to draw down on that money and also raise some money for research, which, as I say, is not what we ever expected to be doing.
That's great.
We're also funding, as one particular optometrist who specialises in this has done all his life, actually manufactured my lens, and he runs courses training people, particularly younger optometrists, in keratoconus and corneal conditions and managing the contact lens around them. We sponsor delegates at his conferences each year where he trains them up. So we just try and do what we can.
Are you happy for us to put your details, well, not your personal details, obviously, but the organisation details in our directory? Is that okay?
Yes, please. Please do. Yeah. Very, very happy for you to do that.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'm very pleased to have found you, having seen your post on LinkedIn. I'd never heard of you, which is not your fault. It's mine, probably, because I should have done. And I just saw your newsletter and I thought it was really good. So, you know, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
I'll circulate it to my fellow trustees and others, and hopefully we can give you some input at some point anyway.
That would be great. Yeah, lovely. That'd be fabulous. Thanks ever so much, Mike. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.